All right, and you're listening to WHUS 91.7 FM. I am Fran Storch, and we are here with Radio Naturopath on WHUS 91.7 FM. It's very exciting. We would love for you to call us. The number to call is 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can text us at that same number, 860-486-9487. And you can write us at radionaturopath@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you, and we would love to answer your questions. So, it's a great day today.
It is a great day today.
Yes. Guess whose birthday it is?
Let me think. I don't know. My memory fails when I get old.
I know, right?
I know.
So
terrible,
so,
isn't it?
Happy, happy birthday to this guy.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you much. Thank you
and
much.
What's
I made
really
it.
I know you made it. He broke the curse. So Ron, poor Ron had a curse. May they rest in peace. His paternal grandfather. What was your paternal grandfather's name?
Breno
Manitza.
Yeah, Breno Manitza.
He
right.
He's in heaven, and he mm-hmm. went to heaven in his 61st year.
Yes, he did.
And then your father, the beloved Rivaldo Manitza, also known as Wally.
Mm-hmm.
Also went to heaven in his 61st year.
Yes, he did.
So we were afraid that you too would go to heaven in your 61st year.
We were, it was in the back of my mind.
But something happened to you that was different from them.
Well, I can tell you what that is.
What?
Health, fitness, and you.
Right. And here it is. And you gave me a little article about it.
I did.
I know.
I did. That's why I gave
because
that to you.
Because
how
many interventions do you think I did with you that prevented your death? What do you think?
Oh, gosh. Well, from the very beginning, when we first met, and we were out on a date. Ooh, date. Remember that? Dating?
Yeah.
Wow. So, anyway, we were out on a date, and you looked at you said, give me your arm, because only Fran would say, give me your arm. And you grabbed my arm, and I reached over, and you looked at it and went, you have food allergies. And I looked at you with a very discounting look, I believe, and said, sure. Yeah, right. What do you mean? And you said, I can see it in your skin.
Well, you probably had keratosis pilaris.
But of course I did. What the heck is that?
Well, keratosis pilaris is, so some of you out there may know about yourselves that when you run your hand, especially along the outside of your arm, what you may think of as your upper arm, the part of your arm that's just below your shoulder and on the outside, that you have sort of this goose flesh chicken skin. And it's there all the time, whether you're cold or not. That's called hyperkeratosis pilaris. It's not a serious condition at all. It's just an inflammation of your hair follicles. And it's caused by nutritional issues. It's caused by not enough essential fatty acids, probably not enough vitamin A. And so your hair follicles will tend to inflame a little bit. And when they get inflamed, you have bacteria that normally lives on your skin, and they eat the inflammatory compounds. So you get little inflammations in your hair follicles. It's not serious at all. It's not something you have to treat unless you really want to. If you want to treat it directly, you can use exfoliating scrubs. You can get nice natural exfoliating scrubs that you can use in the shower, and you can use a loofah, you can use a shower puff, or just a washcloth, and just scrub your arms every couple of days. But, of course, that's not treating the cause. That's treating locally. What you want to do is treat the nutritional cause. And the nutritional cause may be that you're eating foods that are causing inflammation, and you may not be eating enough foods that reduce the inflammation. So I looked at Ron and said, it's likely you have food intolerances. And those food intolerances were causing this little degree of inflammation in his arms. And that's what was giving him the hyperkeratosis follicularis. And so if you have it, what I often do is not only do I help people get off their food intolerances, I like people to take fish oil. It's a good idea if you're eating foods that contain a lot of vitamin A or precursors to vitamin A like beta carotene, and you're going to get all the carotenoids you need from leafy greens. If you eat leafy greens, if you eat good quality dark green salad most days, and if you eat broccoli and snap peas and other green vegetables, that'll help too. But leafy greens are full of carotenoids. You know how you know? Carotenoids are usually orange and yellow and red, but you say, but my leaves are not orange and yellow and red. Well, yes, they are underneath the chlorophyll. The chlorophyll is what colors them green. You know how the leaves change in the fall? Well, the leaves change in the fall because what happens is in the fall, when as the weather is getting colder and the days are getting shorter, the trees can sense this and they know that it's time to start powering down and to thicken their sap and to start going to sleep. So what they do is they seal off. They make a little seal around the place where the leaf attaches to the branch.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it so that the leaf can't hold on anymore. So the first thing that happens before that, as that seal is forming, it cuts off the circulation to that leaf. So the leaves are not able to get the nutrients they need to make chlorophyll to do photosynthesis. So when there's no more chlorophyll, all they have left are the carotenoids. And that's why you see the beautiful yellows and oranges and reds. Those are carotenoids. Now, your oranges, your orange vegetables, like your carrots and your squash and your peppers, all are full of carotenoids. And that's why they're those pretty colors. And they are wonderful antioxidants and they're precursors to vitamin A. So a lot of people don't eat enough of those vegetables. And certainly when I met you, Ron, you weren't eating enough vegetables.
No, I was not eating enough vegetables, but there was a reason I wasn't eating enough vegetables.
Would you like to share?
Oh, haven't I shared this before?
Okay.
Yes, I can share. I wasn't eating vegetables because I ate vegetables more than one day at a time, or let's say 2 days in a row, 3 days in a row, I would spend an awful lot of time with the porcelain god.
And why was that happening?
Because I had a food intolerance. Don't you hate it? Don't you just,
Because what did
I think this is what we call a yes, dear moment.
Because what did we then do? I felt so bad for you because you told me you suffered from irritable bowel syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I looked at you and I said, all right, do you want me to help you fix this? And you said, okay. And I said, all right, well, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to take you off dairy because your dear mother had diagnosed herself with lactose intolerance. So we took you off dairy. And it was, you were a little bit better, but really not much, because when you have other food intolerances, it can cause lactose intolerance. And lactose intolerance will cause you to have gas and bloating. Usually it's very immediate after you eat a lactose-containing food. That would be a non-fermented dairy product like milk or non-fermented cheeses like cream cheese, yogurt that's been pasteurized, ice cream, mozzarella cheese, cheeses that you're supposed to eat basically after they're made, are not going to be fermented. They're going to be curdled, and they're going to have more lactose in them. An aged cheese is aged for days or usually months, and so they have no lactose in them.
Mature cheese.
Yes. And they're going to have a lot less lactose in them, not enough to bother you. And kefir has a tiny bit of lactose in it, but not enough to bother you generally. And because you have the probiotics in the kefir, they eat up the lactose anyway. So even if you get some in your body, those wonderful buggies that are in there are going to chew it up for you anyway. So we took you off lactose, and it was all right. Took off dairy.
It was okay.
It was okay. Then we said, all right, we're going to take you off wheat as well. And we took you off wheat, but we just had you stay off wheat, and we let you continue to have oats without minding whether they were certified gluten-free or not. Oats, spelt, other gluten-containing grains, rye.
Mm-hmm.
And you were like, you were a little bit better.
Beer.
And then we completely took you off gluten.
Mm.
And then what happened?
Well, I had a miraculous thing happen. And within 5 days, I was back to where I was many, many, many years ago.
10 years earlier.
At least.
10 years you had IBS, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Well, at least 10 years. Maybe more.
And what was coffee like to you?
Oh, coffee was battery acid.
Right.
Yeah.
And what is coffee like to you now?
It is the nectar of the gods.
I was going to say it's ambrosia. I knew you were going to say that. Yeah. So
I love my coffee.
So then we made further discoveries with you, among which, so one of the things you notice is when you're gluten intolerant, so we don't know if you have celiac disease or not.
No.
Because we never tested you because at that
Why
time.
Why go back?
Well, and also because you don't, well, I wouldn't put you through that. But at that time, you didn't have health insurance, so we couldn't test your antibodies.
Mm-hmm.
And we never made the decision to pay for it. We could do that, but it's pointless now.
No, it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
We got it figured out.
So we never tested you. So we don't know if you have true celiac disease, and you may not. You can have symptoms that bad and not have celiac disease. You are simply gluten intolerant. I know they're very bad, and the least little bit affects you. So we discovered that not only couldn't you eat gluten-containing items, but you couldn't eat foods that were processed in a non-dedicated facility. Non-dedicated facility meaning a facility that also processes wheat. So if it says may contain wheat because it's processed on shared equipment, you can't eat that. We discovered that because we used to like to go to Trader Joe's, and we found that a lot of Trader Joe's nuts and things.
They buy bulk. They buy lots, and they don't have...
And they don't control the gluten,
They're not real good about their facilities.
I'm not sure if that's still true, but it was certainly true at the time. But we were buying nuts from Trader Joe's, and you were not doing well. And then we pulled you off those, and you did a lot better. And so now, we discovered that you're very, very sensitive. And if something says may contain wheat, we can't give it to you at all.
Or is produced in a facility that also handles wheat.
That's right. Non-dedicated facilities are not.
That's when I can't touch it.
Yeah, right. So you're that sensitive. So that's why we wonder if you have true celiac disease. You may not.
It doesn't matter at this point. Because I've kind of put a cap on this thing.
You're severely gluten intolerant, and you can't even look at gluten. And of course, you don't want to be symptomatic. And so for the longest time, so occasionally you get contaminated, and we have stuff for you. We have enzymes that we give you, and these enzymes, there are many brands of these enzymes, but there are enzymes that can help you if you get contaminated gluten, and they are not a license to eat gluten. You're not like gluten intolerant or celiac, and you can take these enzymes and then go have a pizza. Can't do that. But if you are about to go to a restaurant, or you're about to go to a place where you're not sure if they keep their,
You don't know if their kitchen is clean. You know, you don't know if they're a classic is I went to a restaurant up in Vermont once. And when I went to that restaurant, I stated to them that, you know, I needed something gluten free and checked in and see if they had a menu. And they said they really didn't. But they said, they can handle this, and they'll bring somebody out to talk to me. Well, the person that came out and talked to me was the chef.
Right. And so the chef came to talk to you, and he said, well, they had a very high awareness of gluten and gluten intolerance, and it was very helpful, and that they figured out something that he could, in fact, eat. And so that was very interesting. So the other thing is that these enzymes that you can get, they have something called DPP-4 in them, which helps to break down tissue transglutaminase, which is the tissue transglutaminase antibodies, so that you're not going to have as many symptoms. And so these enzymes, there are many companies that make them. ITI makes them, Enzymatic Therapy makes them, but pretty much all of the reputable supplement companies have an enzyme that helps you in case that you're contaminated with gluten. So what you do is you take them before you're going to go out to a restaurant where you're not sure that it's going to be 100% gluten-free. And certainly you take them if you think you've been contaminated. So you take a couple before you go to the restaurant, or you go to somebody's house where you're not sure that they're entirely gluten savvy. And then if you get contaminated, you take a lot of them throughout the course of the day, along with probiotic. And one of my teachers suggests also sodium bicarbonate until the symptoms of the gluten contamination are gone. So we had a very interesting situation for a while. Ron got a virus earlier this year, and he was having a lot of problems. And since he got the virus, we thought that he started to get these symptoms, and he was getting the symptoms regularly as though he were contaminated with gluten. And I thought, oh my God, what if he's just aging and he's getting resistant celiac disease that can't be controlled by getting away from his diet. And now he has an inflammatory condition. I kept checking with him. Does he have bleeding? Does he have any extra symptoms? Nope. All he had was the classic symptoms that he used to get when he had the IBS. And he kept getting them, and he started having to take his vegetable breaks like he used to have to take, you know, we're getting on 10, 12 years ago when we first pulled him off gluten. And he had to start doing it. Couldn't eat salads. It was not working out well. And so we were trying to figure out what was going on. I thought maybe he had a post-viral inflammatory situation, which can happen. You can get a post-viral irritable bowel syndrome. And we checked him. We tested him with all kinds of things. I gave him a formula that had deglycyrrhizinated licorice in it, and it had arabinogalactans, which they're a long-chain starch that help support your immune system. It had probiotic in it and marshmallow and slippery elm, all kinds of wonderful things to soothe the digestive system. N-acetylglucosamine, which helps to rebuild the gut lining. It helped only a little bit. I gave him berberines, which seemed to help a little bit. The neat thing about berberines is if whatever your digestive problem, berberines are a wonderful antimicrobial. So if part of the deal, which it usually is that you're getting dysbiosis, your gut flora is out of balance, the berberines will kill the unfortunate gut flora. So even if you're eating something that's not working, you might get a little bit better taking berberines because they stimulate the flow of bile. So you have more fluid to help push your digestive system and push things through. And you also, you're also killing unfriendly microorganisms. So the berberines can be really helpful. And they were somewhat helpful, but they didn't take care of the problem. Ron started drinking kefir regularly, and the kefir helps to an extent because of the wonderful probiotics. But on the other hand, we started to suspect dairy. So he took all dairy out of his diet, and we thought it helped for a little bit, but it didn't really, and meant he stopped drinking the kefir as well. So we kept thinking, what the heck is going on? Because it just wasn't going away. And I was starting to worry that he had an autoimmune inflammatory condition, that we were looking at microscopic colitis. And I kept bugging him, are you bleeding? Are you bleeding? Are you bleeding? He was not bleeding, thank God. So he wasn't getting such an inflammatory condition that it was becoming an emergency. Finally, I said, maybe you're being contaminated and we didn't think about this. And this was unfortunate. We buy our nuts from the health food store. And at the health food store, the nuts are in bulk. And the health food store does not guarantee, this particular health food store does not guarantee that these nuts are gluten-free. And any health food store will tell you that if you're buying in bulk, we can't guarantee that your nuts are gluten-free. But we had been buying them for years without a problem. But early in the year, Ron had this virus, and we thought that he had this post-viral, syndrome. And and at that same time, we were continuing to eat these nuts from the health food store. And I got the light bulb and said, you know what? Maybe it's just the nuts. Not that you have a nut allergy, that the nuts are contaminated.
Right. And the thing is, you know, we didn't think twice about it because I was always eating the nuts and it was no big deal. It was,
right. You
know, everything was fine. But I got that virus over the winter, which apparently a lot of people got.
Right.
And it was a virus that people were all complaining that was with them for 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, it seemed like it never go away.
Right.
And mine didn't go away for 3 or 4 months. And
right.
So I became very concerned about this and thought that I had something more serious because, you know, that looming 61 to 62 thing.
And I just kept checking in.
Not knowing whether I'm
in,
dying or not.
I just kept checking in with you. And then finally I said, stop eating the nuts from the health food store.
Stop eating the nuts. And it ended just like that.
In a couple of days.
Within 2 days, it was gone.
So that was the problem. So yep. What we're not 100% sure of is if it's, well, let me ask you this. You've been eating Kind bars, right?
Yes, I have.
The Kind breakfast bars.
Yes, I have.
Do they have nuts in them?
Not sure if they do. I could find out, but I am not sure if they do.
Yeah, so because you're doing the Kind breakfast bars. Have you eaten a certified gluten-free bar with nuts since you stopped eating the nuts?
Again, I'm not sure.
Okay, so that's what we have to.
I can't.
So
yeah,
what we're not 100.
We'll look into that.
So you have. We don't know if you've been eating any nuts at all. So we still don't know 100% if you now have a problem with nuts. That's merely digestive, which is weird, or if the nuts we've been eating are just contaminated. So what our test is going to have to be, we're going to buy some certified gluten-free nuts that are uncontaminated. So this is a problem for you. And you're still getting gluten symptoms, but you can't figure out what it is. If you're eating out of the bulk section of your health food store, it could be a problem because wheat flies around there. People gather flour wherever the nuts are processed. They could be processed on shared equipment, in places where they use wheat flour for some reason or they use other wheat products. And so that's definitely an issue. And so you can get nuts that are packaged that are certified gluten-free, that they're put in a package, they're kept away from wheat products. So we just have to get some and see if he reacts to them. Because the thing is, if you were not reacting and all of a sudden you started reacting the first of the year, it could be a change in supplier, that it could be that simple.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to get you some. Have you had any nut butter, sunflower butter or peanut butter or almond butter? No. All right.
Not really.
Yeah.
No. I'm just looking, like a lot of Kind bars are a lot of, have
they're
a lot
full
of,
nuts
in them.
Yeah.
Right. But I don't know what the breakfast bars do. I'm still
right.
looking here to try to find it. But it's, yeah, no, I haven't really tried anything else there.
We know that you've been eating the Kind breakfast bars and with no problem.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No problem at all with them. So that hasn't really been an issue. Let's,
right. But what's in those?
Let's
I don't know.
Go to my favorite right
fruit
here.
And oats.
I'm looking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if we can, so we can find that out, that would be neat. So that would tend to mean that you don't have a nut allergy, that it's definitely a contamination.
5 super grains, dark chocolate chunks, and a dash of cinnamon.
Okay, so no.
No nuts.
So there's no nuts. So we still don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Hang on.
We have to get this.
Oats, dried cane syrup, brown rice flour, canola oil, sugar, gum, acacia?
Is it acacia or acai? Okay.
Acacia.
Uh-huh.
Chocolate liqueur, raisin paste, water, oat flour, cocoa powder, honey, millet, buckwheat. Amaranth, quinoa, cocoa butter, cinnamon, vanilla extract, salt, soy. Nope, no nuts. No nuts in that.
Okay.
Allergen information contains soys made in a facility that processes peanuts, tree nuts, and sesame seeds.
That's interesting. So you're completely fine.
I have no problems with all of those. Yeah.
Right, but those Kind bars are certified gluten-free.
They are.
Yeah.
They are.
Okay.
So, you know, that's the other thing is that, you know, I think Kind is pretty good about that sort of thing. That's how they started.
So I have an idea. I have an idea of a place we could go that would be easy for us. We'll go after the show and we'll see if they have some gluten-free nuts for you there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We can do that.
We'll say hello to Bogosha.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right down here in the corner.
Because I bet she's got some. Yeah.
Yeah, she probably does.
That would be awesome. All right. So that was very interesting. So for Ron's birthday, we talked about Ron's health problems.
Oh, lovely.
And how we solve them. By the way, Ron couldn't drink coffee when his IBS was bad. One of the things that I did when I first got to know him, I said, why are you drinking so much coffee? And I got him to drink more tea, and he drank rooibos tea for a while. And then after a while, we also had you off dairy for that first year.
No, I don't think I was drinking any coffee when you met me.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't. Alrighty. I hadn't been drinking coffee for about 10 years.
You were drinking
years.
Tea. That's
I was drinking
right.
a lot of tea.
That's right.
I wasn't drinking any coffee when I met you because I couldn't touch
right.
it.
Right. Okay.
So I had been off coffee for almost 10 years at that
right.
point.
Right. And so that's right. That's where the perfect tea came from.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
All right. So when we, and I got you drinking some coffee, I got our tea, and I got you drinking some rooibos tea, and we kept you off dairy for like a year. And then
Pretty
I went
much.
To, right. And then I went to a conference. I went to the NHAND conference, and Christine Doherty was there, who has celiac disease, and she was lecturing, and she said, that you can recover from lactose intolerance. Not everybody does, but you can recover from lactose intolerance if you stay off gluten for a while. So I came home and said, Ron, did you know you can recover from lactose intolerance if you stay off gluten for a while? You want to try some dairy? And he tried some dairy, and he was okay.
I had a spoonful of your ice cream from the dairy bar.
Right.
I think is how I started with it.
And you were okay.
And
so we started eating dairy again.
And then I went and had a large ice cream at the dairy bar.
Yes, because you were very excited. And then you were fine.
Yeah,
right.
Because I love ice cream.
And since that since the beginning of the year, we got you into drinking kefir because you didn't like it. Because the kefir can taste, you're okay with yogurt, but kefir
right.
you found to taste more like feet than yogurt, right?
I wouldn't say feet in general.
But it had
I'm
a more fermenty taste.
I'm not much of a foot taster, so I don't know if feet is actually it. But
Yeah, but it was a little too fermenty for you.
It had kind of a funny flavor to it.
Yes,
but I've acquired a taste for it. I kind of like it
because kefir is so good for you.
Well, if you're not
dairy intolerant, it is really good for you. The probiotics that are in kefir, there's so many probiotics, and it's actually better for you than yogurt. Not that yogurt is bad for you. If you get a high quality yogurt, it's very good for you. But the thing about yogurt doesn't have as many active cultures in it. And the cultures in yogurt don't persist. But in kefir, the cultures persist. And there's many of them. There's many, many of them. And so kefir is really, if you want to do something really nice for your health, if you're not dairy intolerant, if you're lactose intolerant, you can probably handle kefir because it only has a tiny bit of lactose in it. And the lactose is still going to be consumed by the reason there's a tiny bit of lactose in it is because of the incredible proportion of all the different probiotics that are in the kefir, and they eat lactose. So even if you consume that little bit of lactose, the probiotics that are in the kefir are going to continue to eat the lactose for you. And so those probiotics are really health-giving. They're really amazing. They're going to go in there and they're going to kill bad microorganisms for you. They're going to help your immune system. They're going to make vitamins for you. They do just so many wonderful things. Even though your belly's better now, my opinion is you should keep up with that kefir. It's really good for you.
Yeah, I had some this morning.
Yeah, good.
Yep.
Good. We should keep it
I'm
in the house and keep drinking it, and comes in flavors, and it's good.
Yeah, it is.
I like, there are many brands out there. There's like Lifeway, there's Helios, there's a few different brands. Lifeway I kind of like because if you get a flavored brand, the net amount of sugar in it isn't very high. Of course, if you go ahead and buy unflavored kefir and then you season it yourself, you know, you throw in a whole bunch of cinnamon, you could throw in cocoa powder and just lightly sweeten it, and you might get away with having less sugar in it than the flavored kefirs.
Mm-hmm.
But I still find that people who drink the flavored kefirs, I mean, if you go and you grab a bottle of the peach kefir because that's what you like, it's fine. It works well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just very good for your digestion. So, happy birthday to the man, and we're so thrilled because one of the things that happened was I assessed your health and gave you some things to do, and you were a strong enough man to say, I respect this woman, and I'm going to do what she says. Not all men would do that. And may I say, if you have a woman who loves you, who wants to look after you, and who is smart and has some ideas for you that help your health, it's a good idea to follow what she says. Because if you do, guess what? What happens to men who marry smart women?
They live longer.
Yeah.
Yeah, how about that?
Mm-hmm.
Which is where this whole segue came from. I kind of sent you over a link this morning of something I found, and I thought you might find it interesting to talk about because there's an article that goes along with that, and if you take a look at that, you'll see. And it talks about how, men who are with smart women live longer.
Right.
So either find yourself a smart woman or send her to school. Do something.
Yes.
I don't know.
But it says here that there was an actual study at the University of Aberdeen in Scotland. I almost married a Scotsman. He liked me. He was happy with my intelligence. He's a lovely, lovely man. I just couldn't deal with his
other things.
He had a habit that I could not
things.
Deal with. But he was a lovely man, and he was very happy to be with me. He had no problem with my intelligence, and because the thing is, if you're going to be with me, you better not have a problem with my intelligence. Because I'm smart enough to tell you where to go if you got a problem with it. I mean,
I would never do that.
No, you don't. You don't suppress friends, whatever. Like, if I have to edit myself for you, there's just no point. There's just no point. Yeah. I mean, I don't care as much about being pretty as I do about being smart. Yeah, that's more interesting to me. You can compliment me and say I look cute, I have nice hair, I have, I'm whatever, I'm buff, I'm whatever. That's great. That's fine. I'm much more flattered by being told that I'm smart. I think because that's much more important to me. And my brain is my gift. That's my – and because I like to use my brain to help people.
It's my gift too.
Your gift is my brain?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
So a big shout out to Lori Wood, who was somebody I went to grade school with and high school.
Okay.
And Lori Wood, I think she still lives in New Jersey. And she said to me, she wrote in my eighth grade yearbook, she said, you should do something with that smart brain of yours. And
yeah.
I never forgot that.
Yeah.
And so I wound up in high school making a decision to become a physician. Because mm-hmm. I wanted to help as many people I could with that smart brain of mine.
And you do.
Yeah, I try.
And you're quite good at it.
I hope
you're
so.
You're quite good at it.
So anyway, so during a talk called Dementia, How Can We Protect Ourselves? Professor Lawrence Whaley, Emeritus Professor of Mental Health in the College of Medicine and Life Sciences at the University of Aberdeen. By the way, I've been to Aberdeen. I've actually been to the University of Aberdeen.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been very many places. Like, I've been to Europe twice. But one of the places I went was Aberdeen, there, okay. This place.
Okay.
He said that the thing a boy is never told he needs to do if he wants to live a longer life, but what he should do is marry an intelligent woman. There is no better buffer to dementia than intelligence. That's right. The women are smarter. That's right. The
oh
women
boy.
Are
here we go.
Smarter.
All right. I made a mistake here. I'm boosting her ego to a very high degree here.
I can't say that's all I get. That's a sample because that's a song.
Fortunately, you guys only have to deal with this for like the next whatever minutes we are on the air, but I have to deal with it for the rest of the day.
People choose to listen to this podcast.
I know.
They sign up for it and they listen to it.
I know they do.
Because they want to.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Because we're like an old married couple.
We're like an old married couple.
Yeah, we are.
We haven't been married that long. I mean, we're not even really married.
No,
I mean, we're like in common law states, we're married.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are.
So the men who choose to marry smart women live longer and happier lives and are less likely to suffer from Alzheimer's disease and dementia. So here's some cool stuff. Past research shows that if you do intellectually challenging games like crossword puzzles, they can help to ward off dementia by stimulating the brain. So it would make sense that a wife who engages in challenges her husband's mental faculties could benefit him in the same way. Shockingly, Shockingly, some men who were married to these clever women even showed physical signs of dementia in a brain scan, but didn't suffer from any symptoms of the disease.
There you go.
In fact, they were determined to be highly intelligent and fully functional. So if you have any, this goes a couple of ways. One of those is that, of course, if you're going to be with somebody, the smarter they are, the better off you're going to be. I mean, barring other things, if they have other problems, that can be an issue too. I mean, if they have, if they're difficult in other ways, that could be a problem. But if they're merely smart and otherwise kind and nice and easy to get along with, or relatively, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm easy to get along with. I'm relatively easy to get along with because, you know, right?
This is one of those three moments.
Exactly. So yeah. You're not going to sit there and say, oh, yeah, she's really laid back.
If you say
yes,
you could
get
yourself in some trouble. If you say no, you could get yourself in some trouble. But if you say three, then you didn't say yes and you didn't say no.
I'm not, you know, 100% easy to get along with because I'm a high achiever. Would you say I'm a high achiever?
You have a bit of amperage to you, yes.
Yeah, so... You know, but there's some things I feel I need to get done, so I get them done.
Right.
That's what I do. And so when you so one direction is if you're a man or it doesn't even matter if you're a man, if you're a gay couple as well, if you're with an intelligent partner, the intelligent partner is going to challenge and stimulate you. And the other thing that you have going for you is that I look out for you, and I look out for you in intelligent ways. I check in with you and see what's going on. I'm very observant. I see what's going on in your life, and I give you nudges and directions to help you have a better life.
And I certainly don't do anything for you.
Right, and you exactly. You do all the same things for me. That's absolutely true. And
that's
there
how
are
it works.
Times when I say, I'm not sure about this. I have to check in with Ron.
Mm-hmm.
I do that a lot. You know, okay. If I'm making a big life decision, I go and I talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think you're not a schmendrick.
Yeah.
You know.
A schmendrick?
Yeah, you're not a schmendrick.
Okay, schmendrick. Tell us what schmendrick is.
You know, a dopey person.
Oh.
Somebody's not too smart.
So that's a Yiddish thing.
Yeah.
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 Oh, okay.
Pretty much.
Okay.
Hi, Dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
Anyway, so, the other side of this is, if you have any signs of dementia, regardless of the condition, you have a diagnosis of early Alzheimer's, or you have Lewy body dementia, or you have any condition that affects your brain function, It's just like anything else. I'm not saying that it will definitely cure your Alzheimer's or anything like that. But if you have any signs of dementia or you want to ward off dementia, the more you use your brain, the better it will work. And that's true. That's true of any condition. So if you have, I have a lovely little girl in my practice with Charcot-Marie-Tooth. Charcot-Marie-Tooth is a form of muscular dystrophy. The girl's an athlete. So she uses her muscles all the time. She sore a lot, but she uses her muscles, and she's very athletic, and she does well in athletics. Why? Because her weak spot, she exercises it. So if your weak spot is your brain, if you exercise your brain, it's going to work better. How might that be? Well, if you have dementia, one of the things that's going on is you're getting some neurodegeneration in your brain. But the brain is plastic. What that means, it is able to reform, it is able to heal, it is able to change and grow. And so if you have some neural pathways that stop working, you can create new neural pathways. Kind of like, you know, if the road is all messed up and it's getting potholes and it's getting like really yucky, you find another route. You just don't go that way anymore. Until they fix the root, and fixing the root can be an option too, because the brain does display neuroplasticity. Because anybody can learn anything at any age, and if that's true, that means the brain is plastic until you die, really. So, I mean, anyone can learn something at any age. You can learn something that you didn't know. You can, and by learning something, I mean you can meet a person and learn their name. Well, you just learned something new. I know it, at my age, it's hard for me to remember. I mean, it's terrible. I go, the worst place is the Mansfield Community Center. I go there and go for my swim. I see all the ladies in the locker room. They introduce themselves to me a bunch of times, and it takes me a few times before I remember their name. That's a bad one. What's up with that?
It's your hard drive's full.
I guess.
You need
but you need to be reminded a lot. Like, after a while.
You do.
I remember. Happens. Yeah, and the other thing I have is my patients. If I see sometimes I see a patient who, if I saw them in my office, I would know their name.
So here's the deal. Okay, so you meet, let's say over a year's period of time, you meet 10 new people. This is a for instance, okay?
Yeah, it's so a big for instance.
Yeah, I know. Okay, but you meet 10 new people. So you remember those 10 people, right? And then the following year, you don't meet 10 new people, but you meet 20 new people. You still know those 10 people that you met, right? Now you've got 20 more in there. And then the next year, all of a sudden you meet 50 new people. Why wouldn't you forget people? Why wouldn't you forget names? I mean, you just keep adding more and more information into your brain, and there's only so much that you can retain.
Yeah.
And you know, if it's a question of remembering who that person that you met at the local coffee shop, that you really had a neat conversation with and it was really fun and it was great, but you never saw them again until 3 years later, versus remembering that, okay, I got to pay the mortgage. I got to make sure that I do this. I got to do all these different things. And you know, there's a work-related thing and all that. I mean, it's going to be less important. So you're not going to remember
it's
it
gonna
as well.
It's going to be buried.
You're just not going to remember it as well. So the rule is everyone should wear a name tag.
All the time.
And that would resolve a lot of problems if everybody wore a name tag.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, it becomes problematic in the locker room.
Yeah, well, then they could get a tattoo.
Oh, my goodness. I suppose. So everybody should have a tattoo. No, I'm not getting a tattoo.
That's not good because that goes down a dark road. We're not going to talk about that.
It goes down a dark road.
A very dark road. So get this. Are educated wives heartbreakers? What do you think of that idea? Okay, here's why. In the 1980s, several studies suggested, this is from Harvard Health, that men whose wives had more education than they had were more likely to die from coronary artery disease than men married to less educated women. So the problem is women with advanced degrees had more problems with their health. They were at a higher risk of coronary heart disease and hypertension, obesity, high cholesterol, smoking, and lack of exercise. So if you're going to be smart, you need to also be fit. Yeah. And you qualify there.
Yeah, but the thing I don't qualify for, like I, you know, I'm borderline with the hypertension thing.
I know you are. I know. Yeah. That's because you're a nervous Nelly.
Because I'm stressed. Yeah. No, it's yeah, the nervous Nelly thing. But the nervous Nelly thing is not paramount. What would help the nervous Nelly thing?
if you didn't have so much stress.
Yes.
Yeah.
But and what would help me? What's the big thing that I'm missing that would help me with my stress?
Sleep.
Yeah, rest. Exactly. Exactly. I am too busy. And that's part of the problem, that when you're smart, you might choose a career where you're extremely busy. And like, I work because I feel that I have to. I mean, would I like to spend 11 hours in my office? No, but I do it because I feel like I have to. But if I could not do that, like, you know, if I was done with my work in 7 hours, I wouldn't think of things to do and stay there. I would come home and I would rest more.
Yeah.
But I'm in a situation where, you know, I'm kind of have to work the hours that I work. And that's what happens if you get into a job situation where either you want to work or you like to work. You get into a high-powered job where you have to work a lot of hours and you don't necessarily have the downtime you want. And I do get the exercise in, but all the things that I do, I don't get enough rest.
So I have a question here, because what if you're a non-married man and yet you have a large social network?
Yeah.
But you're not married?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that suffice as being something that would help?
You know what? These are studies. And whenever you look at a study, whatever the study is, whether the study is, you know, something that came from the University of Aberdeen, or if it's a study that you found in PubMed, or if you did lab work, you know, if you did blood work, my patients will sometimes say, this is my blood work. This is what it says. We have to do something about this. And I say, this is a piece of paper. You are a person. You are more important than this piece of paper. We use tests as something to help us to study you. They're a tool, but you are more important than the piece of paper. So, you know, if you're hyperthyroid, but you have no symptoms, and you technically your thyroid numbers are high, and you have absolutely no symptoms at all, there may be another reason why those numbers are off. You have to look at the numbers and see if there's something wrong with them. But you don't change you if you have no symptoms. So you have to look at you have to correlate. Now, that's not to say that you ignore a test result, but you do have to correlate. And it'll say this on your lab results. Correlate these test results with the clinical picture. That means look at the result. Look at the person, see what's going on. You have to do that. So some things I'm like, all right, the piece of paper says this. You have to do something about this. So, and a good example of that is your vitamin D is too low. It says your vitamin D is too low. So why won't you take some vitamin D? Why do I want you to take some vitamin D? Because there's 9 million studies that say if your vitamin D is too low, you're not going to be as healthy as if your vitamin D is higher. And we're in Connecticut. It's hard to make vitamin D, especially on a day like yesterday and today. So you're probably going to take some vitamin D because it's going to make your life better. It's a silly little thing. You take a little tiny pill or a little drop of something, and it's going to really improve your life. Mm. So you might as well take the vitamin D.
Okay.
You were going to say something.
Yeah, well, I'm reading all these interesting things, these different studies. And there was a study about marital unhappiness and stress that are linked to important cardiac risk factors, hypertension.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you should not only be with someone, but you should be happy.
Right. And if you're not happy,
you're actually reversing the
yes.
You know, so.
And I tell people, because I get that. I get people coming into my practice who are not happy in their relationship. And I talk to them about that. And I say to them, listen, when you go home, you're supposed to be able to, and here's your visual.
Oh, goodness.
You should be able
on
to
the
just.
Radio, Fran.
You should be able to just lie down and be dopey and wear sweats and just feel really calm and relaxed and happy when you get to your house. It should be your safe haven.
You're never like that.
And if I can't be like that, it's not.
I'm
going to make
I'm
sure
kidding.
I'm like that, because if I come home and I'm stressed all the time, if you don't feel happy or safe or comfortable in your own home, something whether it's.
Well, it's not a home anymore, it's a house.
It's not.
That's the difference between a house and a home.
And it's because you're always struggling with your partner. What I tell people, I don't tell people dump the partner. I tell them do everything you can to fix the relationship.
Right.
Yes. At whatever that means, whatever you need to do. If it means getting counseling, it means learning to communicate better. Do everything you can from here to Sunday that you can to fix the relationship. And give it your all, because if it's a relationship that you chose to be in for the long term, if you have children, try to learn how to communicate better. And if you've done absolutely everything you can and you can't communicate well, then you have to figure out a way to not be together anymore. People stay in unhappy relationships for all kinds of reasons. They stay in relationships where they're unhappy for the sake of the children. And ultimately, I don't think that's a good thing because the children see that you're unhappy. And children know. Children would rather be happy than see you suffer. Mm-hmm. So you find a way to be separate, to co-parent your children, and not be upset with each other. And if that means you can't live in the same house, that's what you do. But, you owe it to yourselves to be happy. Because happiness is an independent risk factor for good health. And so you're absolutely right. If you're single and you have a great social network and you're happy, that's going to positively affect your health. So is a person who's really happy with their friends and has a great social network and, you know, they're talking to their friends all the time and they're out with their friends and their friends are over to their house all the time and they don't have a partner, are they going to be, is that as good for them as having a partner that they're happy with? I don't know. You know, certainly they're both terrific things. And if the said person has no objective signs of ill health, then of course it's helping them. We do know that happiness is an independent risk factor for cardiovascular disease, whether you're happy or not, and that even people who smoke and have other levels of cardiovascular disease have less cardiovascular risk if they have good social networks and good family relationships and good partners and stuff. Conversely, if you're lonely, being lonely is bad. Being alone is not necessarily bad. If you are alone and happy, that's fine. If you're alone and you're thinking, oh, but I'm happy being alone. Yes, that's fine. Be alone and be happy. It's okay. As long as your health is good. But if you are lonely, being lonely means that you are alone and you don't want to be alone. Then you need to find ways to not be alone because it's not good for your health.
Right, right.
What are you going to say?
Well, I just found something here, a Danish study. Okay, and this was among the men in Denmark. It is more dangerous to be unmarried or divorced than to be married to another man. So obviously this is a couples thing. And yet
they're trying to show that it's okay to be gay.
Well, there's other studies that are showing that gay women don't live as long. And that's
really
kind of weird, and I don't understand that. I have to do some more research.
Gay
on
women
that.
Don't live as long as what?
As gay men.
Oh, but do gay women live as long as straight women?
I don't know that. I haven't. There's so many studies.
Because that's what you have to figure out. They don't live as long as gay men. But what does that even mean? Because, because if gay women, is it because they're gay or is it because they're women?
You know, it depends on the study you're reading here too. Because there's other things here that say exactly the opposite.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. No, it doesn't.
Because having a good partner, whatever their gender.
I think that's the key.
If you are gay and you choose to be with a partner of your same gender, that's what's going to make you happy. And so, I mean, it shouldn't be any different. Theoretically, it shouldn't be any different from whether you're straight. It doesn't matter. You know, because if you're gay and you're with the wrong partner or you're alone, you have all the same risk factors. You know, so if you're a gay woman, you should be with a woman. And if you're a gay man, you should be with a man. That's what's going to make you happy. And theoretically, that both of those situations are going to make you happier than if you're lonely.
It just really,
I think lonely is the key here.
I think lonely is the key. That's why I say if you have a strong social network, then wouldn't that suffice for the marriage situation?
Theoretically,
I'm just trying to reassure my friends out there who are unmarried and may be concerned about it that, it's not the end of the world.
No, it's not the end of the world. But the issue is if they are, in fact, lonely and they're putting all their eggs into having a partner, maybe they want to take some eggs out of that basket and put it into just get some more social connections. Go on meetups.
Exactly.
Go meet other people. Just meet people to have
like
fun
interests
with.
And
I want to throw
like
something
to
else out there. We in the United States and perhaps in Western European culture, we put a lot of value on our primary relationship. We are very, very much attached to having a partner and having a spouse and having that person be a primary relationship source to us and get a lot of our enjoyment and a lot of our social interaction from being in that primary relationship. There mm-hmm. are places in the world where your primary relationship isn't your primary, like your romantic relationship isn't the primary relationship in your life. So like when you go to Africa, for example, in traditional African culture, you're more, yes, you have a partner and you have a partner who you have children with and you're married to and you may love them and all, but you're actually, your relationships with your sisters and your friends and your extended family connections is actually more important than that. So so if there's some, you know, infidelity, so-called, it's not as big a deal. People are like, oh, I kind of expect that. Because
really?
It's not their primary relationship. Mm-hmm. For you and me, we're each other's primary relationship because that's the convention in New England. It's the convention in North America. But, you know, we are in that situation where we're kind of separated from extended family. Imagine if we saw Susan and Michael all the time and we saw Nancy and the kids all the time. And we see Nancy and the kids all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were always around. We wouldn't be as reliant on each other for, like, everything. So one of the problems that we have is we have this expectation in our society that we're going to rely on our partners for a lot of our emotional support. And because we live in these nuclear families and we live in these separate housing situations, mm-hmm. you know, it's an effort to go see your friends.
Right.
You know, and so, and especially in this day and age where we have so much technology, you can be on your technology and have social networks that way.
Right.
And, I think technology is part of what keeps us at home. We have a lot of entertainment available to us at home, so we're less likely to go out. I mean, why would you and I go to the movies when we could be in our own house, in our own cozy room, and you know, eat what food we want and not spend extra money, and we have all this cable and Hulu and stuff.
And fall asleep there instead of at the movie theater.
The movie theater. And then, you know, if you fall asleep at home, you could always watch the thing again. You could fast forward or back up. And
I know.
And right, exactly.
But you don't get out, and that's not good either.
I know.
And that's causing a just a plethora of health problems.
And it's changing how people interact. That there's a millennial issue, mm-hmm. where a lot of millennials, they don't go out. They're like they're like old people. They stay home. Why would you go out when it costs less to stay home?
And you can Skype.
And you could talk to all your friends, you know, mm-hmm. through Facebook or they don't use Facebook. They use your Snapchat, your texting,
Instagram.
Instagram.
If you're trying to stay up to date, I think it's Instagram
right
now. Right.
I'm
still learning, but.
And Snapchat. The young fellow that was just in here when we were finishing up, he said, "Is it okay if I do a little Snapchat right now?" And he did a Snapchat.
Okay.
Yeah, but he was just, you know, it was their outro for the podcast they just did. They did a nice little outro and talked about what a great day it was and how they had a wonderful time together. It was very sweet. It was really nice what he did. He selfied himself and he could see the whole room and he Snapchat. I might be in it. But fortunately it's Snapchat, and Snapchat goes away after so many hours.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, that's how it works.
I don't know
so,
how that one works.
Right. So, wow. Boy, I was going to talk about the harmful effects of caffeine, but I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, and we had a caller that called in about cleansing
the digestive tract.
So we might want to table that one for
another
show.
Yeah, I think we're going to do that.
Because he wanted to know a little bit more about the benefits of that. And
I
want to
see
out.
If there's anything that, because I just came from a wonderful conference. I went to the Connecticut Naturopathic Physicians Association conference at Wesleyan University. I mean, it was just held at Wesleyan University because mm-hmm. My friends Rick Leva and Robin Burke, that they put together the conference there, which was convenient for them because they're in Middletown. But it was kind of central, and I had never been to Wesleyan before. So we were in the Exley Science Center, and we were in a nice big room there, and they had a nice hall, and we had dinner. We had lunch there. So we had all kinds of lectures and talks. So we had one of the people I love to hear talk is Michelle Puglio. Michelle Puglio is a naturopathic physician. She practices in Torrington. She's been practicing for many years there. And she has a pronounced interest in sexual health, particularly women's sexual health, but men too. And she likes to test people's hormones and help them out hormonally and talk about, so she talked about reference ranges. So here's a nice tip for you ladies who are having some issues with your sexual health. One of the things that happens to us when we get into menopause is we get vaginal dryness. Ow! And you may have the desire to have sex, or you may simply want to please your man or your woman and have intercourse, some kind of penetration, and it hurts. Ow! Why does it hurt? Because when the estrogen levels are going down, you have some level of atrophy of the vaginal tissues and the vaginal walls. So you might want to do something to help that. There's two things I want to talk about. One is lube. Mm-hmm. And lube, if you're using standard lube from the store, like KY or Extraglide, things like that, they have petroleum products in them. And if you use enough of those, it's going to make you dry out more and be uncomfortable. Coconut oil is awesome. Coconut oils, soothing. It's good for you. It helps to nourish the skin. It has essential fatty acids that are going to actually moisturize and reduce inflammation. And it's antimicrobial. It kills yeast. You're more likely to get yeast infections when you're that age. There's also some brands of natural lube that you can get from the health food store that are flavored, and they're also aloe based. And aloe is full of water, and it won't dry you out. So those are very nice. You can also get suppositories that have hormones in them, and they don't have to be prescriptions from your doctor. They can have estriol and DHEA in them, and those are things that natural medicine practitioners can get for you. So just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, that's a neat note to end your show on.
Yeah, so
it's pretty cool.
Have happier, healthier, more comfortable sex.
It's a beautiful
thing.
Since
we were talking about, our relationship, how it started, being together, being with a smart woman, and now this smart woman's telling you how to enjoy your sex better.
Yeah,
and
I like this smart
that's
woman.
That's a high note.
Yes, it is.
So you've been listening to 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, and we will be back next week with more Radio Naturopath here on WHUS 91.7 FM.